I present the Prophet of the Almighty Baller.
For listening to part two of A Tribe Called Cavs, getting more into that wacky LeBron and his wacky ways. Make sure to check in. We have a few cool interviews scheduled here coming up. Tim Cato, the editor-in-chief of Mavs Moneyball, Mason Ginsberg, a contributor to ESPN that covers the Pelicans, and a couple of guys from a cool site that I've been talking to that'll all be this coming week. Follow me at Almighty Prophet on Twitter and like my Facebook page, almightyballer.com. Special thanks to FanEssentials.net for sponsoring us. You can find them on, you guessed it, FanEssentials.net. And also, special thanks to you, the listener, for supporting the podcast by listening, by sharing it, giving it a 5-star review, and by checking out AlmightyBaller.com, and by getting FanEssentials.net, and by just being you. Anyways, here's the episode.
All right, who's talking? I think it was Oliver. Go ahead.
No, I think it was Armand. I don't think I had anything to say.
Okay, Armand, go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, look, with Kyrie, it's like he's not even in the top 30 in assists. He's tied with Delly for assists.
Yeah, their off-ball movement is garbage.
So it's not like he has the ability to... I mean, it doesn't seem like he has the ability to be a Rondo or anything like that, which he doesn't really need to be, but... It's just he is 24, and as much as his development might have been stagnated by playing beside... a ball-dominant player like LeBron.
J.J. Hickson.
I think he must approach the playing style with more of an idea that, you know what, I need to make this team better, and then I'll get my shots. The other funny thing to note is, at least with LeBron, he loves those zipping those cross-court passes. He really just loves to pass the ball.
Yeah,
I mean, he's the only non-point guard in the top 25 all-time of assists. Like, he knows how to share the basketball as much as he will put up his shots.
The thing is there, and you can see it statistically and when you watch the game, the only one of those three ISO players who will actually pass out of ISOs is LeBron. So I think it seems kind of self-evident that the lack of off-ball movement and the lack of facilitation when LeBron is the primary ball handler is not so much LeBron's fault as it is Kyrie's fault.
You saw it in his Miami Heat days. He was fine taking 15 to 18 shots and just being super efficient. The other thing with the team as a whole is Tyronn Lue, he's just not a very good coach, man. Like, I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, Tyronn Lue's kind of shit, right?
I mean, I haven't been impressed. I feel like he hasn't...
He's terrible. I mean, their defense has been so gosh awful. I mean, it's really piss poor. It's really bad to watch.
Yeah, Ty Lue's not good, man. Oh, yeah, we're going to get Kevin Love more touches on the elbow. Now, Kevin Love is having arguably one of his worst months in his NBA career right now.
And no one's been complaining about it nearly so much as they were. And it's a coaching issue. It's a coaching issue for sure. And I think it comes from having players that are as, you know, out of this world talented as Durant, Westbrook's, and LeBron's, but...
Yeah, but look, the thing with the Thunder is their top three players, their big three, are all above-average defenders. Russell Westbrook's a dynamo on defense when he wants to be. Kevin Durant's made himself into a really good defender. And I mean, Serge is a good defender, too.
You know, you can't just bank on the talent versus talent, smash, smash, go ahead, win thing. Like, this isn't, you know, this isn't like a game of Tekken where, like, if you play with King and stand right next to someone, just punch, 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 like, you're going to win. Like, you... There's a certain degree of balancing and putting players in positions to succeed that, like, you were saying, the distinction between static space and space that is dictated by movement and, like, reconstitutes itself.
Well,
and without that, they just end up being as clogged toilet as the Thunder used to be, and that's a, you know...
As the Thunder still are.
Yeah, as the Thunder still are, to be honest. And at every turn for the Thunder, that's
been... I had a bit of faith in him because I do think David Blatt lost control over his team, but Ty Lue hasn't been any better.
I mean, they're definitely worse. Also, they're definitely worse.
The Cavs have also just, like... low-key been the Scott Brooks Thunder for 2 years in a lot of ways.
And also, man, I just don't think that this team defensively can hold their own against the Warriors and the Spurs in the NBA Finals Series. I mean, imagine if Kevin Love had to play against Draymond Green in last year's Finals for six games. Like, Can Kevin Love stay in front of Draymond?
Not really Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love is doing everything he can.
And, like, especially with Steph, I think Steph can easily put up 30 a game on Kyrie every night.
Yeah.
Kyrie's not a good defender. I don't know if it's an effort thing, athleticism, mix of both, but he just doesn't get it done. He's a below average defender. Three players, except for LeBron, who does take a lot of plays off, aren't good defenders.
Possibly even worse.
LeBron James has been a great defender this year. I think that people have missed the boat on that.
He's been great, but Love and Kyrie have been way weak.
True.
He takes more plays off than he has in the past.
That's going to hurt you in the playoffs, man, when teams really can kill you in the half court.
I disagree. I think especially in his last year in Miami, LeBron has really... And I mean, part of it is because they're playing too slow, if you ask me.
He talked about increasing pace. Did you look at their pace right now? They're tied for second last in the NBA, and that worked for about five games.
But with that decreased pace, I think that LeBron James has really been picking up for the fact that, I mean, Tristan Thompson is an above average, not a lot above average, but like Mozgov can't move. Kevin Love can't move either. I think LeBron in a lot of ways is making up for the fact that Kyrie, their guard defense is so bad.
Kevin just gets murdered in the pick and roll defense. And I love LeBron when he's focused. He's still an unbelievable defender, but he's taking more and more plays off.
You know, you were talking about LeBron not leading by example. LeBron's the only one playing good defense on that team. LeBron's the only one who's really trying to facilitate other people's play. LeBron's the only one who's, you know, rebounding outside of the 4 and 5 spots.
It is incredibly difficult to gauge how much of an impact he would have versus an opportunity cost, because he fails the box score to such an extent and so well that it's totally possible that people could fill those gaps, but it is very hard to make that assumption.
Yeah, no, well, you can't make that assumption because, like, when he's not playing, well, okay, so minus Kevin Love, right? When he wasn't on the Cavs, they weren't doing any of those things, and when he's not on the court this year, they're still not doing those things. So, Oliver, you were talking about when LeBron isn't playing that they had a better thing going. It's like...
Don't
buy that. Okay.
I'm saying, if you want to have a team game...
I think that when Kyrie isn't playing, there's better chemistry with LeBron and Kevin. And when Kevin isn't playing, there's better chemistry with Kyrie and LeBron. That's sort of how I see it.
Yeah, and that's fine. But however you dice it, the way I see it is, okay, you've got Kevin Love at, like, what, 27, 28, wherever he is in his age, 23 for Kyrie Irving, and then you've got LeBron at 30, and LeBron is the biggest ego of all of them, first of all, and anytime we've seen LeBron not on the court with the Cavs, it seems like the team plays more free. They actually play for each other, it seems like, more, and they don't seem as down, they don't seem as negative about everything. I see, like, all their players are tentative. All their players play tentative when he's on the court. Like, you have to dilute or divert to LeBron. And I don't want to over-exaggerate it because, yes, LeBron is a great player, but you made a great
point.
I didn't have the profile
to argue this point because I just thought no one would try to make it. Like, I just, like, I don't...
I didn't either. No, I get it. I completely understand. Like, there's no statistical argument to make. Either way you take it, like you said, I think that they're better off with two of their guys starting, with one of them coming off the bench in a different rotation or manner.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the alternative that we're talking about here. But my point being exactly is that you've got three egocentric players, three guys who really want the ball, who've been used to having the ball in their hands. And here's where I kind of side with Kyrie Irving. And this is where I really feel bad for the guy, to be completely honest, because I think he's in a really, really crappy situation. I really do. So he gets to Cleveland. He gets drafted number one to Cleveland, and he lifts them.
He's crying all the way to the bank.
No, he's not crying. I mean, I'm not trying to say it that way, but I am saying I can feel for a player like that who's 23 years old and essentially got all the keys to the city and everything else were taken out of his pocket and just totally robbed. And LeBron has them. He's got his and everybody else's. And fair point, whatever. But Kyrie Irving didn't see this coming. Even before the season that LeBron came, nobody knew that he was going to leave.
Yeah, no.
And I think Kyrie's been that guy since he was born, basically. You know what I mean? He was that guy at Duke. He was that guy at Cleveland. And there's no reason... I mean, I think it would take him at least a couple of years to kind of make that jump, I guess, from the guy who's always known to have the ball in his hands and be that guy to being that second guy or second fiddle, especially when he's 23 years old. Like, this guy is just about to hit his prime, or he should be. And I think that the past 2 years he's been, like I said, I think that he's declined. Talent, overall, skill set, doesn't look the same as it did 2 years ago.
I just like, woof.
Okay. I mean, I think
that's where I side with the whole LeBron. I would rather have LeBron off this team than I would take off Kyrie Irving, because to be completely honest, at least you've got 7 or 8 years with Kyrie, where you've got maybe 2 or 3 with LeBron. That's the problem.
Okay, so here's my thing with that. My one thing, and I think that everything you said can be true and it can still be worth having LeBron. I'm still torn on this question. But I think that the question sort of becomes, is a wearing down LeBron plus slightly declined Kyrie a better chance for a title than an improving Kyrie and an improving Love?
No.
I don't think it is.
Shut up!
No. No, it isn't.
James! Yeah, I do think, I kind of think it might be.
No.
I kind of think it might be.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm not arguing that point whatsoever. What I am saying is that I just don't see them winning a championship in the next 2 or 3 years. Like, I really don't. There's no realistic way that I see this.
I mean, I guess if you fundamentally think that they won't win a championship with LeBron, then it's not crazy to think that they should just start over now. But I also think that, like, that 5%...
That is crazy.
But yeah, I also think this is the case of that 5% window theory. Like, a couple injuries and they totally can win a title.
Yeah. Well, and I mean...
Here's the thing. Even though it doesn't look like LeBron's really going to win one this year, just because he has so much mileage, like 45,000 minutes on his body in 13 seasons, I think, first of all, he'll be so worn down by the time he gets to the finals. I mean, what if they have to play 5-6 games every round? By the time he gets to the finals, like, the Spurs and or Golden State are just going to run him into the ground, or even OKC. But the one thing that you have to keep in mind is that injury problem, or that relative issue that could happen with any team where one player goes down and that team could really be in big trouble. There's also the point that you have to make, which is that, let's say LeBron decides, you know what, I'm just going to be alpha dog. It's something that goes over a lot better in the playoffs than in the regular season, because in the playoffs you saw, even last year, LeBron was like, I'm the alpha dog, I'm going to lead you guys. And you know what? Kyrie and Kevin Love fell in place.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
You know what? You're the guy with the playoff experience. We're going to follow your lead. And
well, there's also a decided hierarchy there, too.
Perfect example was Game 3 in Boston. Like, Kevin Love had a monster game. He had some good post-ups. He shot a lot of threes. He had some clutch shots. And, like, LeBron shot more than the other guys, but everyone else was involved. There just seemed to be a synergy on the court.
He's ready to fit in instead of fit out.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's harder to do that in a regular season game.
Well, I think that there's also one thing that they don't have in Cleveland, they do have in Golden State, is like a decided superstar hierarchy. In Golden State, it's like Steph Curry 1, Draymond 2, Klay Thompson 3. Cleveland, it's like
LeBron 1.
Well, from the outside, it's obviously LeBron 1.
J.R. Smith 1.
Right, but
J.R. Smith 2.
To everyone on the court, it's them 1, whatever other order. You know what I mean? Like, that hierarchy is not nearly so defined in Cleveland, which makes it harder to manage those egos. And it was true in Miami also that they had the defined hierarchy.
Exactly. And there's a hierarchy there. But there's also a hierarchy. There's also a hierarchy in the management, too. And that's another problem.
Oh, yeah,
so, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
LeBron James isn't drawing up his own plays like he did last year. That shouldn't happen no matter what. I don't care who you are. They should have drawn the play up for LeBron in the first place. But just, you would never see that with Steve Kerr and Steph Curry. That just wouldn't happen.
Oh, gotta have a chain of command.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Well, I think it's proven to be true, pretty much.
Yeah, no.
Like even that's really the solution to the Lakers quandary, to be honest.
That's why they need Tom Thibodeau.
Is that it was, like, eventually...
No, they do. They need a good coach. I was about to say, we're going to have Mason Ginsburg, Pelicans writer, on soon. And one of the points that I sort of have to make about them is the thing that they need before we can have a real conversation about them being a quote-unquote legit team is, like, they need a training staff. And the equivalent of that for the Cavaliers is, like, they need a fucking coach. I mean, Tyronn Lue's a water boy, you know? Like, Tyronn Lue, he's not qualified, he's not thrifty and smart, he's got a lame mustache, and he thinks he's, like, Robert Crusoe or something from the Pink Panther.
I mean, I think if there's one thing that we've learned from the past couple of years, especially with the deep playoffs, it's that exact thing, that coaching is more valuable now than maybe ever before because there's such a surplus of talent in the league, especially in the best teams. There's enough talent going around that any team is sort of competitive with any other team, or could be in a lot of settings, but coaching makes a huge difference.
Like Mark Jackson versus Steve Kerr.
Mark Jackson versus Steve Kerr, but even, and then like you see from the matchups, like the rosters of the Warriors and Spurs versus the roster of the Thunder and the Clippers.
Yeah.
Coaching quality makes an enormous difference in pretty comparably talented teams.
So you admit that Doc Rivers is garbage?
I still think he calls good plays in a timeout, so I've always said he was a garbage coach. He just calls good plays in a timeout.
That's why I'm surprised that Tom Thibodeau hasn't been hired yet. That just doesn't I mean, and also, the Cavs made a huge mistake in hiring Tyronn Lue. I don't know what they were thinking. There's a lot of good coaches that are out on the free agent market right now just waiting to be picked up by somebody. It doesn't make any sense to me why the Cavs didn't go all out on a coach that would at least set LeBron
straight. Look, the thing is, I agree that Ty Lue might not have been the best option, but when you look at it, LeBron probably did want Mark Jackson because, once again,
so what?
He's signed to Clutch Sports, which is a whole other topic. But switching to an interim coach who is an assistant coach already on the team is much easier to sell than bringing in a brand new
coach. It's Pat Riley.
Coach. Oh, like, my that's God, just so a power negative. Play that LeBron wouldn't even be able to sell to the media.
Next question.
Next question.
Actually, let's speak on Clutch Sports for a little bit. I mean,
next question.
It's just a whole nother thing that's just, it has some weird undertones.
Next question. I mean,
Tristan Thompson signed to Clutch Sports, so it just seems like he has that kind of parity that reason to protect Tristan and the players around him because he signed to his company, but it's just weird. He's being too much of a businessman at some points. It's just, he's just trying to put his hand in too many pots at the same time.
There's this great Grantland article called LeBron the Chess Master. I think that LeBron had more of a role in determining the play style and mechanics that were part of the whole Miami thing, then I think you guys sort of understand. Because you remember the Joe Johnson free agency where LeBron was like, we need this guy, and I would be willing to play the four more if that was the case. I think part of the reasoning there is that LeBron realizes that he should be playing the four in a perfect situation, but they don't have a good wing player for him to be doing that. If LeBron is playing the four, then who the fuck is playing the three? You know, so
yeah, it's their whole lineups are, I'm not even a big fan of some of Ty Lue's lineups. It's like, you just need to commit to a five. Like, he's just kind of fluctuating too much, and I don't know, guys. It's a weird situation there. As I said before, LeBron just needs to relent a bit. He just, I think, focus on the court. Let his business managers run his business during the season. Maybe off season, yeah. Go talk to Eric Bledsoe and all the other guys on Clutch Sports. I mean, he had Ben Simmons sitting courtside at a Cavs game. Like, it's just weird. And
but
furthermore,
why would you want to put, the last time he put faith in the Cleveland Cavaliers, they got Larry Hughes and Zildrunas Ilgauskas to be the other two parts of the big three.
Yeah.
Like, the Cavaliers are not the Heat. The Cavaliers are not a well-run organization.
I was actually about to say something very similar, that, like, I think a lot of LeBron stuff that we're sort of talking about right now as problematic is the result of, like, poor management by the Cavaliers the first time around. Like, he's gotten burned by alleged basketball experts and whatnot.
Yeah.
For decades. Or for, like, a decade, basically. And I can totally see why he's like, I want to be in charge, because, like, people have just dicked him over for years and years and years. Then he went to a place that, like, did what he asked in Miami, and they won two titles.
You just got to take into consideration that for the stronghold that he has on the whole Cavs organization, it puts his teammates in a weird situation, because they're like, if I piss off my teammate, I could be out of here. It's not even my coach, it's my teammate. And I just would be on such thin ice.
Yeah, I think for, like, understandable reasons, me, you, Armand, Oliver, all of us don't really know what the chain of command was as far as how much did LeBron's voice have an influence in Pat Riley's decision-making and in Eric Spoelstra's decision-making. So we don't really know. But we do know that whoever it was making the decisions, they were good decisions. And I think at the same time, Dan Gilbert is not a good decision-maker. You know, you can see that with the David Blatt firing. You can see it in choosing Tyronn Lue as opposed to some of the great free agent coaches. Like Oliver was saying, like, Tom Thibodeau, you know, the other guys who I'm not thinking of right now because I'm thinking about other stuff.
Even to an extent, Mark Jackson would potentially be a better pick than Tyronn Lue. I get it. I mean, like, but at least at that point, you've got buy-in from the coach and the player. And it's at least, like, all the way down. You know what I mean?
Because
you have to have that. And it doesn't seem like that's there. Yeah. Tyronn Lue is not the guy who's going to assert himself and sit there. And at least Mark Jackson will speak up and be there as, like, a voice. Whereas Tyronn Lue doesn't even seem like a coach. Like, I just think he's a puppet.
Yeah,
I don't even know what he's doing on the floor.
Yeah, for real. I mean, like, Tyronn Lue has said a handful of things that he wants his roster to be doing. Like, play faster, you know, have more elbow touches for Kevin Love. To a minuscule extent, that's been the case. But there's a lot of the reporting coming out of Cleveland when David Black got fired that was like, you know, he wasn't even calling his own timeouts. He was shit. He did this, that, and the other. And one of the things that was reported is that he went to management. He went to Dan Gilbert and was like, look, I have statistical evidence here in this three-ring binder that we need to be playing faster. We need to be playing this way or we're not going to have any chance against the Warriors. And they just were like, we'll look into it, you know? It's a funny situation where it's like, I agree that the best case scenario for LeBron is someone who is a, to use Jalen Rose's sort of dialectic, he needs someone who's, you know, a godfather, a puppet master, you know? But
yep.
If you guys read those articles from the first year when they struggled out of the gate in Miami, it's like, LeBron wanted Spo gone, and Pat Riley was like, no, Spo is not going. So after a little while, LeBron finally bought into Spo.
That's the best case scenario, and right now, if you tell Dan Gilbert to be the puppet master, that is not going to work out.
Well, Dan Gilbert's like the sort of dude who will just take a bunch of ingredients for something, put them in a pan, and put the pan in the oven without preparing them in any way, and then expect it to be like a souffle when he's done.
Daryl Morey, Dan Gilbert, I mean, you can go down the list, but the
Dan Gilbert's the kind of dude who would...
He's just collecting parts.
...buy the house next to his ex-wife and train spotlights at her backyard just to fuck with her.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, he's just like...
I don't even think LeBron would be able to handle, like, a firm coach. Like, when has he ever had one? Spo, maybe, but I don't know if he'd be happy with a coach who tried to tell him what to do. Like, LeBron has gone on record, right? He said, I have a basketball genius. I have the best basketball IQ in the world.
Right.
And maybe that's true, but how does that translate into a coach who's telling LeBron, no, hey, you're wrong?
He's guys, LeBron's friend.
We need a coach who's not so much different, but better.
Like,
you guys remember that quote?
That's the thing with LeBron, as brilliant as it is to have basically a coach on the floor, how much does that undermine the actual coach on the sideline, right? And you have to take that into consideration because players will be looking at the coach and the coach will call a play. And then they'll look at LeBron to be like, is this okay? Do you agree with this? Or do you want to do something else, LeBron? Like, it creates a weird dynamic. And
Yeah.
I keep on talking about the Spurs and the Warriors, but you wouldn't see that. You won't see players on the Spurs ever questioning Greg Popovich and looking at Timmy and being like, Tim, what do you think? Or looking at Kawhi or even with Golden State,
at Steph. Really, if Dan Gilbert like knew what he was doing, he would have thrown his weight behind David Blatt and been like, look, guys, you're going to do what David Blatt says. At least try it for a year. For the year that he was coaching, maybe you can fire him. You know, when they did, after a year of really giving him the reins. It's like, it is documented that on certain decisions, Pat Riley was just like, look, LeBron, no.
Yep.
You're right on this, that's you're right deal. On that. But you want this to happen, but no, you're wrong. Like, we're not going to do that. So, I mean, right.
That's where you need the guy. Yeah. That's where you need the guy to set your foot down and be able to say that to a guy like LeBron, and nobody is there to do that.
Yeah, and it needs to be, and I think we are all sort of coming to the conclusion, because Dan Gilbert's not going to sell the team, that it's not going to be their GM, whoever the hell, that I made jokes about. Armand, we had Joe Harris on, and I was cracking jokes with him about, you know, hey.
Oh, that's dope.
I had you.
That was one of the better. That was fun. Episode.
I had you on NBA 2K, and you did really well, so I should probably send that info to the GM. What's the name of the GM for the Cavs? What is it, like LeBron? So we were cracking jokes like that. So it's not the GM, whoever the hell his name is. So, like, it pretty much has to be the coach because, like, I mean, they put their chips, I don't know, what's a good metaphor? They put their...
They've gone all in with LeBron
James. They've gone all in with Tyronn Lue, and, like, that's not a good choice.
LeBron James, and they're not someone without anything else to help.
Exactly.
To make a stupid StarCraft metaphor, right? It's like they have an army of all those little, like, pokey robot guys, the Zealots, with, like, no air spaceship guys to back them up against whatever those bug dudes are called.
The Zerg.
Right. It's like...
There's
just no support system for, you know, it's like a one-man tag team. There's no support system or, like, thing in place, like, to make LeBron maximize his ability.
Another wrestling reference?
Yeah.
Good.
Like,
yeah.
LeBron doesn't, and then, or for whatever reason in this setting, LeBron's not maximizing his abilities to the fullest possible extent. And I think, you know, a coach is what's going to make that different.
Yeah, I was sitting in the media section. I think it was yesterday. I don't remember when it was. Nice. It may have been last week or the week before. And they were telling – I was talking to someone. He made the analogy.
There were checks and balances in Miami, right? It was like the government. There were checks and balances.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I do think you're right that, like, there were checks and balances. There was something in place to keep LeBron from making all the decisions on his own unilaterally. This arrangement is not the case in Cleveland. And it is showing itself in myriad very sort of distressing team building-y kind of ways that are making it increasingly sort of easy to be like, well, this looks looking more and more like a failed experiment. At the same time, it's hard to say that because they're going to win 55, 60 games.
It's not a good idea.
And if the meteor lands on Steph Curry, then they're probably going
to
win.
LeBron, he might be chasing rings now, but he needs to realize he's going to need to just really incorporate his teammates to try to maximize their potential if he wants to get to the finals and actually truly challenge the powerhouses in the West. The other thing is, with the Cavaliers as a whole, when you watch them play, what we need to take into account is you can't have dissension. We've been talking about organizations and owners and Dan Gilbert and all these kinds of things. If you don't have a clearly structured hierarchical organization and business model, it has more of an effect on a team than outside fans might realize.
Yeah, well, I think that that's...
honestly kind of, I'm not mad at what David Griffin's done so far. It's he's made some good trades, but are they good trades to LeBron or are they good trades to the whole organization, all the front office people? Because I have a strong feeling there might have been certain trades where, let's say, the Mozgov trade, front office didn't want to give up two first rounders, but hey, David Blatt, who coached him in Russia, and LeBron also wanted a good big man, throwback kind of Zydrunas Ilgauskas kind of guy. He pushed it through. And side note on David Blatt, he was a dick, by the way, if we read those articles that were released about him, especially that article by Brian Windhorst. But if you guys go and look back at his stuff that he ran with Maccabi Tel Aviv, he ran some really good stuff. It was a Princeton offense, which might have taken
my dad used to watch him a lot.
With LeBron, he might be chasing rings now, but he needs to realize he's going to need to just really incorporate his teammates to try to maximize their potential if he wants to get to the finals and actually truly challenge the powerhouses in the West.
It's actually even more on point than you were getting at, because I think that that comparison even goes all the way up to ownership. Like, when you talk about the whole turning this, their whole thing, and it was very clear from the get-go, and they've stated this all the time over and over again.
From the get-go.
From their tenure, is that, oh, they own the team, they have the money, but they have basketball people do the basketball stuff.
Yes.
Truth. And they've made that clear from the jump. They've said, Popovich and Buford, you're in charge. We're not interfering. You're the basketball geniuses here. You run the team.
Yeah.
Cleveland has never had a moment like that. Like, Dan Gilbert has never once even appeared to think, like, I should take a step back and let some really qualified, smart people do this job. He has his nose in it the same way that Dolan does, the Bus family
kids,
does.
The Bus kids, like Jerry Jones
and Daniel Snyder have in the NFL that, like...
Run Dive.
Yeah. Yeah, Run Dive. There's a bunch of owners like this, and it's a huge problem, and there's not... When owners are tinkering so much that it erodes the confidence in the structure of management from below, because...
So what I've always said is that there's three types of owners in terms of what's best and what's worst. The worst type of owner is the meddling owner who doesn't know what he's doing, right? That can be seen all over the league in a way that's clearly substantiable. The second best or the second worst type of owner is the type that's meddling but does know what he's doing. And that'd be like Mark Cuban. But that will never be as good as ownership who will let the professionals do what they need
right,
to
like,
do.
Look at the teams that are winning
Spurs,
titles. Like
or the Warriors.
Yeah, just go through the owners of the teams that won the last titles. Lacoste with the Warriors, the Holtz with the Spurs, Harrison with the Heat.
And the Mark Cuban model can work, but it's just not as good
well,
as
like,
letting...
Cuban's the, like, out of the
yeah,
past,
Mark
you know,
Cuban's a rare entity, though.
Right, right.
Yeah, and of the past decade, most of those teams are teams that had owners that stepped back. And what that does, and I think that this is actually... Maybe the key is that it really does, I think, shake the confidence of people in the people the owner hires. Like, if the owner feels the need to keep sticking their nose in, it doesn't make it seem like they trust those guys. If they don't trust those cats that they hired to do the job, like, why should the players trust them?
Yeah.
If the players don't trust them, then you have these dynamics where it's like we're deferring to LeBron. All of a sudden, you have the things Armand's worried about where it's like players look to LeBron to confirm the coach's call. Then you have dissonance and... a mess on the court, and then you start losing games to the Nets by 9 points in March, which is
I mean, I don't think that's all that big of a deal, but it's like...
I think it trickles down in a very substantial way. I think that that's where that same issue of chain of command comes from. That
lack I just mean like losing to the Nets. They're just like
that's just an example of like of losing to whoever.
Yeah, sure.
It's just an example of like the Warriors and the Spurs are so good that little gaps like that are unavoidable, and they have them. Because, and largely because of poor ownership. And I think that distinction
wait,
of the
wait,
owners is
I didn't get what you just
like,
said.
Like, just that chemistry gap, that lack of trust that's instilled by poor ownership is a gap and a problem for that team that, like, the Warriors and Spurs don't have. And the Warriors and Spurs are already so good that like, that little edge is, you know, a huge difference. Yep.
Very, very true, Lux.
Hey, but you know...
Very true. I am totally in agreeance.
You know what an ownership you should trust you, is? What?
I said, thank you, Oliver.
Oh, thank you, Oliver, whatever you said. You know what? You know what's... You know what's an ownership you should trust?
OwningFanEssentials.net.
The ownership of the corporation / business / your friendly neighborhood FanEssentials.net.
/ our sponsor.
/ our sponsor. Armand, do you know
slash what? The gift that your girlfriend is getting you, from what I hear.
Well, yeah, my girlfriend did text me and say, hey, I have a great gift for you. And, well, she said, I have the greatest gift from you. And if that's truly the case, then she got me a fan box from FanEssentials.net. Armand, do you know what FanEssentials.net is?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty sick website and company. I love it.
Armand, I've never met you in person, but what size shirt do you wear? You sound like a large. Medium or large?
I wear a large.
Yeah, yeah. But you're like a medium-sized guy who wears a large shirt.
Yeah, large.
And hey, you're a Bucks fan / Raptors
fan,
right?
Yep, I'm a bit of both.
Yeah, and you know what? You're up in Toronto, you're up in Canada, but here's the great thing about FanEssentials.net. They don't care. They'll go over the border. They don't give a shit. They'll send you a box right to your doorstep in Toronto. It'll show up in this really cool packaging that sort of has that sleek cardboard material, sort of like what iPhones come in. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that nice sort of like smooth cardboard.
Right, right, yeah.
Non-cord.
It'll show up. It has
like they really care, yeah.
Hey, man, I care. Oh,
no,
wait.
I'm saying like they really care.
Yeah, like they care. Because they do care about their product.
Yeah, they put in that extra effort.
And that's why it's such a stupendous product, because every box is handpicked by them. It's all team-sponsored gear that's from, sometimes it's from third-party makers who just got the licensing, sometimes it's from the team themselves, but every time, you love it because it's great quality gear for only $14.99 or $34.99.
It gets delivered to your door or your friend's door. Or your parents' door.
Or your stepdad's father's door.
But it gets delivered monthly as long as you keep paying the subscription. And there's some great news that the first month of that subscription is 30% off with the promo code ALMIGHTY at checkout. And you know how to spell ALMIGHTY because you're looking at the name of this podcast right now. Almighty.
That's great news. You're right.
But if you cannot smell even the smallest of words,
ALMIGHTY.
So thanks for using promo code ALMIGHTY. And thanks for listening through this promo, even though it was pretty good and I'm sure you weren't all that bored. So now we can get back to the topic at hand, which is the Cleveland Cavaliers, or whatever it is we're talking about, if I end up copying and pasting this promo and using another stuff with the cool music behind it. So, alright guys.
Alright, that's it right there. I basically am just having this outro, so since the music ends for the promo, and I now have this music going on because it is A Tribe Called Cavs and we are remembering Five Dog, who unfortunately passed a week ago. So thanks for listening, follow at Almighty Prophet and like almightyballer.com on Facebook. Thanks, and check out these cool rhymes.
Yo, Fife, you remember that routine that we used to make spiffy like Mr. Clean? A tidbit, a spidgin. I don't get the message, so you got to
okay.
Run the pigeon.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
So then grab the microphone and let your words rip.
Now here's a funky introduction of how nice I am. Tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram. I'm like an energizer because you see I last long. My crew is never ever whack because we stand strong. Now if you say my style is whack, I swear you're dead wrong. I slay that body and El Segundo, then push it along. You'll be a fool to reply the Fife is not the man. Cause you know and I know that you know who I am. A special shout out piece goes out to all my pals, you see. And a middle finger goes for all you punk MCs. Cause I love it when you whack MCs despise me. They get vexed, I will next, cause none can test me. I'm just a fly MC who's 5'3" and very brave. On top remaining, no home training cause I misbehave. I come correct and full effect of all my holes in check. And before I get the butt, the gym must be a wreck. You see, my aura's positive, I don't promote no junk. See, I'm far from a bully and I ain't a punk. Extremity of rhythm, yeah, that's what you heard. So just clean out your ears and just check the word.
Check the vibe.